Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook in Waco, Texas, talking with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist, who is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And how are things going?
Well, this is not the first time we've done a Sikkim Sportscast with you down there and me up here, but this is the last day of my business trip here, and I'll be back late Wednesday. But great weather in Pittsburgh for sure, and productive as we get things going there. But you know, we're hitting a quiet spot, obviously, as May typically is during the college calendar, unless your baseball team is doing something, which Baylor's baseball team kind of isn't. But anyway, yeah. This is the May evaluation period for the coaches that are out doing their thing. And, of course, we had a little bit of news with the former starter Gary Bohannon finding a new place to play.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and start out with some of the coaching evaluations and visits. And with Baylor having been as successful as they have been, particularly last year, they got a 6-star and a 6.1-star that have come down and visited, and that hasn't, not 6-star, 6.0 rated,
right.
And 6.1 rated. And a 5-star, Colin Simmons, mm-hmm. and DJ Lagway have come down to visit. And I don't remember a 5-star visiting Baylor before.
Well, it's not often you see it. I mean, I couldn't tell you the last time it's happened. But, I mean, the fact that they were down there early, you know, Simmons was down right before the spring game. I think it was the Tuesday before the spring game. So that was, what, about the 19th, I think it was, or something like that. And, of course, Lagway, who's the Baylor legacy, his dad played there, of course. You know, DJ came back for the spring game on the 23rd, and now with the coaches going out and the evaluation period and looking at prospects and things like that, they're now doing that where they're going back to visit those guys. But I would dare say that what this does is that it brings a little bit more substance to these, because, you know, when you're in May evaluation period and, you know, a ton of coaches come through all these schools all the time. That's not, you know, that goes without saying, but, and you know, and they'll meet the kids or the recruits or whatever, and there'll be the niceties exchange, and it'll sound like it's all good and everything else. And it'll just be a quick hello or whatever, but you know, they're there to watch them, of course, in practice or whatever, you, because a lot of these high school teams are going through spring workouts, and then they'll be back for spring football games, you know, that sort of thing. And my feeling here is that there's a little more, if you will, juice, substance, like I said earlier, to these circle backs, if you will, between Simmons and Lagway. Now, Lagway, Baylor's got a big fight on its hands because he's a huge national recruit. He's still got a little ways to go on his recruiting anyway, but you know, because everyone's offered him. I know that a lot of Baylor people are hopeful that the legacy situation will matter, make a big difference, and it could, but I don't think it's as a lock as people would like to think it could be, just because of where he's at in terms of a national recruit, national programs get him. If Baylor were to eventually win this fight, it would be one of the greatest recruiting wins in the history of the program. The same would go for Colin Simmons. I mean, we got a long way to go there on that as well. He's a kid, you know, the fact, though, that there's been this connection set with him. Remember, he's the number one player in the country for our 2024 class. And then just to give you a quick update on Lagway, he's the number 7 player in the 2024 class. So Baylor saw 1 and 7 who are both in Texas. That's not surprising that you get those highly rated kids from the state. But I think what it shows is the fact that, you know, as we've talked about here and there, Stephen, that Baylor's ability to connect, resonate, have an impact on higher-rated kids, really showing. And I think there's a little bit more to these swing-bys in these evaluation periods simply because of what they did last year and what Aranda's reputation has been after, you know, what he's been able to accomplish as a defensive coordinator between Wisconsin and obviously LSU. And then how it's translated up here in its second season. Expectations for the season are really high. I think this year for Baylor football, obviously, is one where, you know, they have the huge expectations of trying to go back-to-back with Big 12 championships and then see if they can get into the college football playoff discussion, make a run there. All to be determined down the road. But if they have a great season, that doesn't result in the playoff or whatever, but they get another New Year's Six game like they did last, like they did this past season, that continues to add to their cloud as a program to be contended with on the recruiting front, and of course on the national front as well, in terms of their being competitive.
Yeah, and when you talk about the Baylor having a chance to make the playoffs there, I noticed that in a lot of the preseason, these are the way too early preseason things. They're kind of going with the old guard, the Oklahoma, and then Texas always gets the big spring bump and everything. But I think that there's a national perception lag that takes place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because, I've talked about this. Let's just talk with Texas first, where, last week I talked in in what was he thinking about my frustrations with all this. You remember, and that was off the fact that they didn't get anyone drafted anyone taken in the draft, and Baylor had six. And the reason why I'm going with this is because, there's always great talent that comes down to Texas, but they can't seem to find a way to put it together, and then it becomes a mess down there. And then I don't know. But Texas's reputation, for whatever reason, they just get that benefit of the doubt of the they get the benefit of the doubt of this of the national media. Whereas Baylor, despite when it has great seasons in it, obviously had one of the great seasons, probably the best season in the history of its program last year. I don't see how you could argue that. But anyway, that, and I think there's still like this reputation. Well, can they do it again? Can they do it again? And Baylor kind of doesn't get the benefit of the doubt in some respects. Now, I say that, but I also still feel like, and I've said this before too, like when preseason publications come out with their top 25, and those should be coming out shortly. And then, of course, when the AP and coaches preseason polls are released, what is it, late June, or excuse me, July, maybe early October, or something like that, I really think that they're going to be top 10. I know people are more guarded and say, well, I've seen top 15, but I really think they're going to be top 10. Because of the fact of what they got coming back on the fronts. And but I think for those who might be a little bit more guarded with that, they just believe that it's probably because of more issues in the skill positions. But again, between that and my belief that they're going to be probably, the preseason favorites to win the Big 12, or it's going to be neck and neck with them in Oklahoma again, just because it's Oklahoma. I just have that feeling that's the way it's going to come down. And so I think this is where Aranda's credibility might be able to change that persona for Baylor in the offseason, to where Baylor's lack of benefit or benefit of the doubt starts to evaporate. And of course, it'll be backed up if they have another great season this year. By the way, I'm drinking bad hotel coffee, so.
Oh, I'm drinking good coffee. I'm not aware of anybody having built a reputation as fast as Aranda did. His first season, and I think it was really kind of a blessing that his first season was the COVID year and nobody saw it. Because it was not a good season. But I think that the fact that he saw he saw the problems on offense and he fixed those to some extent, and they've got both lines returning. But where they're gonna have people going, is like you say, the fact that basically on offense, every skill position was up for grabs, and they love to look at the skill positions, even though it's really the Lions that do most of the game winning.
I think, with the way, of course, when you change offensive coordinators to a physical brand of football that matches what you want to do on defense, I mean, this is just a physical program. Let's just look at it like that. And I think that just adds up to what they wanted to do. They executed very well, but I think now what they were able to do last year, and here's the interesting thing, when you make the change from starting quarterbacks, a guy who led you to basically 12 of your 14 wins, or starting 12 of your 14 games rather, in Gary Bohannon, and you make the switch to a sophomore, a kid who played 2.5 games, won the Big 12 championship game, of course, in Blake Shapen. But when you make that shift, that and you have question marks at the skill position, between running back and wide receiver. It tells you what they think of their talent and again, why they made this decision early because of what we've things we've talked about before. They really feel like they got a team that they can make a big push this year. And so that's the interesting thing about this. And yeah, I mean, the 2-7 season, remember, for a first year head coach, when he doesn't have spring football to get everything implemented, that really hurt. And I always, and so people were quick to, get after him for the 2-7 season. And gosh, is this the way it's going to be? And I'm like, you've got to let that season go because of all of the obstacles that he faced. It was that unusual year for him, for everybody, but especially for a first year head coach, when you're trying to get things established and then you don't. Well, now we're starting to see Aranda get into this rhythm with spring football, traditional off-season workouts, things like that. And it's starting to look pretty darn good. And hopefully for their sake that they can continue that into the 2022 football season.
Yeah, and when you mention Shapen coming in, now I saw a lot of people kind of hedging their bets when Aranda, after the game, and you asked him straight out, have you picked your starting quarterback? And he was kind of like, well, yeah, I have, but I want to talk to him before I announce it. I called it. I thought it was Shapen. I didn't think it was close. And I heard some people say, well, they've seen 15 practices that we haven't seen. And they might say, yeah, but we didn't see those. We can't go off of speculation on what the practices, all we could go by was what we saw in the spring game.
Right.
And the thing for me was when we interviewed Aranda earlier and he w before the spring game, when we did at the scrimmage, I heard him, what I heard from him was more him challenging Blake Shapen to take the job. He didn't say a whole lot about Bohannon. He was challenging Shapen. He was telling Shapen, you've got to win this job if you want this job. And I think that's because he knew politically changing quarterbacks was gonna create some, was going to create a little bit of controversy.
Sure. But those are decisions. That's why you're paid, though, in excess of $5 million a year to make those tough decisions. You're not there, you're gonna, there's gonna be some fallout on this. And I'm sure, but look, okay. The other thing is too, is, and again, the other point I've made about this, Steven, is that I really believe they made this pick this early, for two reasons. One, they wanted to get everything established because of what they think this program is capable of doing this year. But the other thing is too, is that if there's that topic of issues in the locker room being, and guys, I don't know if I like this or not, you want to nip that in the bud. You want to address that and get out in front of it. Once the season, spring football season ends, and before the guys take off for May to go home and chill for a while, before they return in June for, their summer stuff. And then when you get back, you don't want that hanging over your head for fall camp. Again, if you were a program that wasn't in the position that Baylor believes it in, you probably could have extended this quarterback decision into fall camp, but Baylor's not in that position.
One of the comments that you made when we did not know for sure who the starting quarterback was going to be was you said that you thought that Shapen would enter the portal if it was Bohannon. You weren't quite as sure that Bohannon would enter the portal. And I think
Right.
what you said was, where's he going to go?
Right.
Well, he's going to go to 2-10 team.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing that it's the guys that were watching the program knew. And I think Bohannon's going to be a real benefit to South Florida because if nothing else, he brings a winning mindset to the
Yes.
team.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling was is that if Gary entered the portal before he actually entered it, my thought was, well, he's going to be in a position where, he's going to go to a situation that's going to be far less than what he was in. And that typically happens to a lot of guys that enter the portal. Very rarely will a lot of portal guys, unless you're the creme de la creme guys. The creme de la creme guys don't enter the portal unless they just have an issue with the coaching staff, all that stuff. But anyway, I really think from his standpoint of going to South Florida, he goes to a program in the AAC that's terrible. It's been terrible the last 2 years. Jeff Scott's been trying to get that thing turned around. And, you know, the other thing about South Florida is, to your point, it's a great thing to have a guy who has a winning mentality, knows what it takes to get it done. Now, the talent surrounding Gary with Baylor was far better than what he's going to be surrounding himself with at South Florida. And the other thing about South Florida is a lot of people don't know about, maybe some do, but it's pretty much like a big commuter school in Tampa. There's not a lot of atmosphere to it. They play their basketball games, I think of the arena where the Tampa Bay Lightning, the hockey team, plays its games. And so there's not that kind of cultural feel like you would have like at Baylor. But I think from Gary's position, he's got 2 years to go, and he can use those, you know, at a place where he's not going to get pushed for the starting quarterback job per se. You know, they won't come out publicly and name him the starter, I wouldn't think. But, I mean, obviously he didn't show up there so he could ride the bench. And so I think he's got to deliver on just leadership intangibles, setting examples on with all the other kids. You know, this freshman, Timothy McClain, that they had last year, I watched him a little bit because he played my alma mater, SMU, last year and wasn't very good. And I think from that standpoint is that they just need to South Florida needs upgrades wholesale, and Gary will give them that push up. But it's a question of, you know, if he can help them this year be a borderline bowl eligible team or become a bowl eligible team or something like that, then it will all been worth it. If South Florida has another thing where they're not sniffing a bowl by the time the calendar hits November, or they would need to have to go on this incredible run in November to become bowl eligible, then it's going to be like, okay, and then everyone's going to forget about Gary, and then they're good. And when they do talk about it, they're going to say, well, I really feel bad for him, but, you know, that's what happens when you lose the starting quarterback job, you know, that sort of thing. Look, I hope for Gary that he has a great 2 years down there, and it's what he wants to do because he wants to play. And, you know, obviously I wasn't right. I thought he would be the backup, but, you know, the more and more as that decision approached, I thought, well, I said, I could probably see him leaving. And then, of course, he enters right after that. And then it's going to be – now it's just a question that, okay, you're going to a G5 school now, so you're not going to be in the BCS picture, but this is all about just fulfillment of just playing the game. And if that's what brings you happiness, then do it.
Now, last thing before we jump into the next topic that I want to say on that is there was some talk, and you and I kind of addressed this on the board, that Baylor might look at bringing in a transfer QB, and I don't really see it happening. And you said that you'd heard they weren't going to bring in a transfer QB. Did not see, to me, the guy would have to have the snaps in practice, which would be taken away from Drones and Rogers, and that scholarship really... If Rogers doesn't get a scholarship, then that's not good.
I mean, I wouldn't think it would be good for CJ, but again, it's all kind of just see how this all plays out for him. I mean, like I said, this could be something that will happen maybe in fall camp where they do award him with a scholarship. And then you've got a real interesting dilemma after that as to who really becomes the number two quarterback behind Chapin. That could be the real interesting thing there. But all that being what it is, I think, you know, they're happy with this because, remember, this is fairly similar to what it was like last year when, you know, Bohannon beat Jacob Zito for the starting position. And and Jacob kind of pouted, and then he wound up leaving. And then it was just one of those things where I think that the coaches were willing to ride with that inexperience behind it because they feel like they have good teachers of the position and how to handle all these situations between Sean Bell and Jeff Grimes. And I think that's what it comes down to, is just get them ready, because, you know, if there's a case where they're going to be thrown to the wolves, they got to be ready for it. And again, they lived on a slippery slope last year without that experience behind them. But here we are. We're going to repeat this again, and hopefully for their sake that, you know, Chapin doesn't get hurt, or if he does, it's not out. He's not missing the extended time, and then just kind of go from there. But yeah, I think that one of the more intriguing questions about the 2022 season will be if Bohannon gets hurt, who moves in? Like I said, it's a question that nobody wants to have answered. But if it does, it's on everybody's mind.
About Chapin, if Chapin gets hurt.
I'm sorry. Yeah, if Chapin gets hurt, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah. That is something that would be kind of a challenge. And this brings us back to the whole concept of the portal and the NIL. And apparently there are no rules anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the rules were always broken a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But now that people don't even have to hide it, there are a lot of rumors out around, and I was looking at Cedric Golden, and he said that that there were guys making offers to some of the Texas wide receivers
mm-hmm.
from other colleges, just basically offering them contracts. Supposedly Lincoln Riley's put out some contract offers.
Mm-hmm.
That this is it's really entered the Wild West now.
Well, not Lincoln Riley, but yeah, I mean, obviously the coaches can't, quote unquote, get involved. They can kind of steer them in the right direction to the guys who would be in charge of that. Yeah, I mean, this what you're seeing now is no different from what my alma mater, SMU, went through back in the mid 80s. I mean, I can remember, if for anyone ever saw that 30 for 30 thing on SMU called Pony Excess, where the NCAA told SMU that, you know, you had a, you know, SMU was already on probation quite a bit, and they kept telling SMU, you got to stop this. And one guy was quoted in the story saying, we had contracts, we had a payroll to meet. Well, that's exactly what we're doing now, 35 years later, Stephen. And it's, you know, and the schools aren't connected to it, but it's like, you know, my biggest criticism of this is the fact that when the NCAA opened this up with the NIL becoming a thing on July 1st of last year, there was no rules, there were no regulations. They just, you know, they just lost in court again. So what does the NCAA do? They panicked and let this thing go without thinking it through. Even if they claim they did, they didn't, because you wouldn't have this chaos of money floating out there like you do. And it's in all these exorbitant contracts. And the thing that sickens me the most is the story of the Miami basketball player who had taken on an agent and he was threatening to leave Miami because of the NIL deal that he had was, what his belief was, it wasn't good enough and I'm going to shop myself out to the highest bidder. That's like, that's free agency. And so, you know, Baylor's, you know, there was one point where Mac Rhodes said that Baylor has NIL deals, I think, for 307 athletes or whatever it was. He said that a couple months ago. And I don't know what Baylor's influence in that is right now. But the point is that it's gotten out of control. We know we've heard the extraordinary, we've heard the wild terms, you know, wild, wild west. Okay, fine. I get that. But at the same time, it's frustrating because when you don't have rules in place and everyone says there are no rules, you know, and everyone just goes off on this thing, you get what you deserve. This is the NCAA's problem. They created it because they lost in court, and which I don't have a problem with players getting paid to an extent like I used to. I've kind of softened on that over the years. But it's just – but when you don't have any kind of laid out map, roadmap as to how this is going to look and how it should be looking, what you can and can't do, and try to get people to abide by this stuff. Most will, some will still try and skirt it. That's just the way it goes. But if you don't have a blueprint in place for people to say, this is what you can and this is what you can't do, then it puts you in a really bad spot and you get what you get right now. And I totally blame the NCAA. I mean, it's basically, someone told me, made a great comparison to the NCAA, that it's just become a production company for the NCAA basketball tournament. And that's about all they're good for.
Yeah, the big thing on this with the NCAA is that they spent so long trying to defend a system that was not going to stand,
mm-hmm.
that they end up getting taken to court and they lose in court and they get taken to court and they lose in court. And then
right.
now they keep getting slapped down in court, so they were afraid to really guide this, and that's the thing right now. They said, well, let's set it up so nobody can really sue us, and that's kind of what happened.
When you basically get your wings clipped like they did, and you've become, they've become such a powerless organization now that no one takes their enforcement, whenever they deal out any kind of enforcement, and they're going to get challenged on it anyway, and then they could probably get sued. I'll go back to what I said. I've said this a time or two before, but if people would have followed Jerry Tarkanian, the late UNLV basketball coach, when he sued them for basically them harassing him throughout his coaching career, whether Tark was right or wrong in players that he was bringing, but when he sued them and he basically forced them to settle, that was the blueprint of saying, you can win this. And then that's when it all started on them. But at the same time, they just did not, they just don't have any kind of philosophy anymore. And everyone looks at them. They don't look at the NCAA with any fear anymore. They look at them and say, whatever. And say, like, well, I can just see, and there's questions being thrown out now as to whether or not the NCAA will be able to be an organization of anything in the upcoming years.
You want to close it out for us?
Yes. So there will be I fly back late Wednesday afternoon, get in early Wednesday evening. Then I'll try and get a blitz together for Friday. I've got some family things that I'll bring to everyone's attention over the weekend coming up, where I'm going to be out of town again. So I'm home for like 24 hours and then I'm gone again. But obviously, like I said, I'll have a blitz, try and keep up with more guys that are being visited by coaches during this May evaluation period. But enjoy the month of May as we get closer to summer. Like I said, summer camps are coming and so are the official visits, and we'll get those up and going for you as well. And we will talk to you all next week in Texas on the Sikkim Sportscast.